Part 2. Dead Ground. Chapter 15. May 15th, 1996, New York City. At Floyd Bennett Field on the shore of Jamaica Bay, New York, a man dressed like a 60s hippie leaned against a Jeep Wagoneer station wagon parked on a deserted end of the tarmac. He peered through a pair of granny glasses at a turquoise aircraft that taxied through a light morning mist and stopped only 10 meters away. He straightened when Sandecker and Chapman stepped from the Numa jet and he moved forward to greet them. The Admiral noted the car and nodded in satisfaction. He detested formal limousines, insisting on a four-wheel drive for his personal transportation. He managed a brief smile at the Levi-jacketed, ponytailed director of Numa's vast computer data center. Hiram Yeager was the only person on Sandecker's top staff who ignored the dress code and got away with it. "Thank you for picking us up, Hiram. Sorry to drag you away from Washington on short notice." Yeager walked toward him with an outstretched hand. "No problem, Admiral. I needed a break from my machines." Then he tilted his head and stared up into the face of Dr. Chapman. "Darcy, how was the flight from Nigeria?"
"The cabin ceiling was too low and my seat too short," the tall toxicologist complained. "And to make matters worse, the Admiral beat me 10-4 at Gin Rummy."
"Let me help you throw your luggage in the car and we'll head into Manhattan."
"Did you set the appointment with Hala Kamil?" asked Sandecker.
Yeager nodded. "I phoned the UN headquarters as soon as you radioed your time of arrival. Secretary General Kamil has rearranged her schedule to fit us in. Her aide was surprised she'd do that for you."
Sandecker smiled. "We go back a ways.
She'll meet with us at 10:30. The Admiral glanced at his watch. "An hour and a half. Time for a cup of coffee and some breakfast."
"Sounds good," said Chapman between yawns. "I'm half starved."
Yeager took the parkway from the airport and turned off on Coney Island Avenue, where he found a delicatessen. They settled into a booth and ordered from a waitress who openly stared at the towering figure of Dr. Chapman. "What'll it be, gents?"
"Lox, cream cheese, and a bagel," ordered Sandecker.
Chapman opted for a pastrami and salami omelette, while Yeager simply had a Danish. They were silent within their own thoughts until the waitress brought their coffee. Sandecker stirred an ice cube in his cup to cool the brew and then settled back against the booth's backrest.
"What do your electronic babies have to say about the red tides?" he asked Yeager.
"The projections look pretty grim," the computer expert said, toying with a fork. "I've run a continuous update of the increasing dimensions from satellite photos. The growth rate boggles the mind. It's like the old adage of starting with a penny and doubling it every day until you're a billionaire by the end of the month. The red tide off West Africa is spreading and doubling its size every 4 days. At 4 o'clock this morning, it covered an area measuring 240,000 square kilometers.
Or 100,000 square miles, Sandecker translated into the old system of measurement.
At that rate, it will cover the entire South Atlantic in 3 to 4 weeks, figured Chapman.
Do you have a clue to the cause? Asked Yeager.
Only that it's probably an organometallic that's promoting a mutation of the dinoflagellates that make up the core of the red tide.
Organometallic?
A combination of a metal and an organic substance, Chapman explained.
Any particular compound that stands out?
Not yet. We identified dozens of contaminants, but none of them appear responsible. All we can guess at the moment is that a metallic element somehow got mixed with synthetic compounds or chemical byproducts that were dumped in the Niger River.
Might even be waste from exotic biotech research, suggested Yeager.
There are no exotic biotech experiments going on in West Africa, Sandecker said firmly.
Somehow this unidentified crap acts as an exciter, Chapman continued. Almost like a hormone, as it creates a mutant red tide with a staggering growth rate and an incredible degree of toxicity as well. The conversation paused as the waitress served their breakfast off a tray. She left and returned with a pot of coffee and refilled their cups.
Any chance we're looking at a bacterial reaction to a raw sewage spill? Asked Yeager as he gazed sadly at a Danish that looked as if it had been stepped on by a greasy boot.
Sewage can act as a nutrient for algae just as manure does with agricultural vegetation on land, said Chapman. But not in this case. What we're dealing with is an ecological disaster that goes far beyond anything human waste can produce. Sandecker knifed the cream cheese on his bagel and laid on the salmon. So, while we sit here and stuff our mouths, a red tide is forming that will make the 91 Iraqi oil spill look like a puddle in the Kansas prairie. And we can do nothing to stop it, admitted Chapman. Without the proper analysis of water samples, I can only theorize on the chemical compound. Until Rudy Gunn finds the needle in the haystack and who or what put it there, our hands are tied. What's the latest word? Yeager asked. Word on what? Sandecker mumbled between bites. Our three friends on the Niger, Yeager answered, irritated at Sandecker's seeming indifference. Transmission of their data telemetry suddenly stopped yesterday. The Admiral glanced around the delicatessen to make sure he wasn't heard. They became involved in a little altercation with two gunboats and a helicopter of the Benin Navy. A little altercation? Yeager blurted incredulously. How in hell did that happen? Were they injured? We can only assume they survived in good shape, Sandecker said guardedly. They were about to be boarded. To keep the project intact, there was no choice but for them to go into a combat mode. During the fight, their communications equipment must have been taken out. That explains why their telemetry failed, said Yeager, calming down. Satellite photos from the National Security Agency, continued Sandecker, show they blasted the hell out of both vessels and the copter and made it safely across the border into Mali. Yeager sagged in his seat, suddenly not hungry. They'll never get out of Mali. They're sailing into a dead end. I've run computer profiles on the Malian government. Their military leader has the worst record of human rights in West Africa. Pitt and the others will be caught and hung on the nearest date palm. That's why we're meeting with the Secretary General of the UN, said Sandecker. What good can she do? The UN is our only hope to get our team and their data out safely. Why am I beginning to get the idea our Niger River research was non-sanctioned? Yeager asked. We couldn't convince the politicians of the immediate urgency, said Chapman in frustration. They kept insisting on setting up a special committee to look into the matter. Can you believe that? With the world on the brink of extinction, our illustrious elected officials want to strut their self-importance while bunched together in executive chairs and vocalize like an a cappella choir. What Darcy is saying, explained Sandecker, smiling at Chapman's choice of words, is that we explained the emergency to the President, the Secretary of State, and several congressional leaders. They all refused our request to twist the arms of the West African nations to permit us to analyze the river water. Yeager stared at him. So, to get a head start, you sent Pitt, Giordino, and Gunn in on the sly. There was no other way. The clock is running down. We had to go around our own government. If this operation leaks out, my ass will be dipped in acid. This is worse than I thought. That's why we need the UN, said Chapman. Without their cooperation, there's too good a chance Pitt, Giordino, and Gunn will go into a Malian prison and never come out. And the data we require so desperately, said Sandecker, will disappear with them. Yeager bore a look of sadness. You sacrificed them, Admiral. You willingly sacrificed our closest friends. Sandecker gave Yeager a granite look. Do you think I didn't wrestle with the devil over my decision? Considering the stakes, who would you have trusted to get the job done? Who would you have sent up the Niger? Yeager rubbed his temples for a moment before answering. Finally, he nodded. You're right, of course. They're the best. If anyone can accomplish the impossible, it's Pitt. I'm delighted you agree, Sandecker said gruffly. He looked at his watch again. We'd better pay up and get rolling. I don't want to keep Secretary General Camille waiting, not when I'm about to get down on my knees and beg like a lost soul. Hala Camille, the Egyptian Secretary General of the United Nations, had the beauty and mystery of Nefertiti. 47 years old, black eyes with a haunting quality, long ebony hair flowing slightly below her shoulders, delicate facial features enhanced by a flawless complexion, she kept her beauty and youthful look despite the heavy weight of her prestigious office. She was tall, and her shapely figure was apparent even under her conservative suit. She rose and came from behind her desk as Sandecker and his friends were ushered into her office in the UN headquarters building. Admiral Sandecker, how nice to see you again. My pleasure, Madam Secretary. Sandecker fairly beamed when in the presence of a beautiful woman. He returned her firm handshake and made a slight bow. Thank you for seeing me. You're amazing, Admiral. You haven't changed. And you look even younger. She smiled a ravishing smile. Compliments aside, we've both added a wrinkle or two. It has been a long time.
Almost 5 years.
Then he turned and introduced Chapman and Yeager. Halla took little notice of Chapman's size or Yeager's attire. She was too used to meeting multi-sized people from 100 nations in a variety of dress. She held out a small hand in the direction of facing sofas.
Please be seated.
I'll be brief, Sandecker said without preamble. I need your help in an urgent matter concerning an environmental disaster in the making that is threatening the very existence of the human race. Her dark eyes stared at him skeptically.
You've made a very weighty statement, Admiral. If this is another dire prediction of the greenhouse effect, I've become immune.
Something far worse, Sandecker said seriously. By the end of the year, most of the world's population will only be a memory. Halla looked at the faces of the men sitting across from her. Their faces were set and grim. She began to believe him. She didn't exactly know why she believed him, but she knew Sandecker well enough to feel confident he was not a man given to fancy, nor would he run around claiming the sky was falling unless he had absolute scientific proof.
"Please go on," she said briefly.
Sandecker turned the meeting over to Chapman and Yeager, who reported their findings on the mushrooming red tide. After about 20 minutes, Halla excused herself and pressed a button on a desk intercom.
"Sarah, would you please call the ambassador of Peru and tell him an important matter has come up, and ask him if it's convenient for him to postpone our meeting until this time tomorrow?"
"We deeply appreciate your time and interest," said Sandecker, and he meant it.
"There is no doubt about the horror of this threat," she put to Chapman.
"None. If the red tide spreads unhindered over the oceans, it will stifle the oxygen required to support global life."
"And that doesn't take into consideration the toxicity," added Yeager, "which is certain to cause mass death of all marine life and any human or animal that consumes it."
She looked at Sandecker.
"What about your Congress, your scientists? Surely there must be concern by your government and the world environmental community."
"There is concern," replied Sandecker. "We've presented our evidence to the President and members of Congress, but the gears of the bureaucracy grind slowly. Committees are studying the matter. No decisions are forthcoming. The scope of the horror is beyond them. They cannot conceive of the rapidly dwindling time element."
"We have, of course, passed our preliminary findings along to ocean and contamination scientists," said Chapman. "But until we can isolate the exact cause of this plague on the seas, there is little any of us can do to create a solution."
Halla was silent. It was difficult for her to come to grips with apocalypse, especially on such short notice. In a way, she was powerless. Her position as Secretary General of the UN was more as an illusionary queen of a hollow kingdom. Her job was to watch over the diverse peacekeeping functions and the many trade and relief programs. She could direct, but not command. She looked across a coffee table at Sandecker.
"Other than promise the cooperation of our United Nations Environment Program Organization, I don't see what else I can do."
Sandecker's self-confidence took another step forward, and his voice, low and tense, came slow and distinctly. "I sent a boat with a team of men up the Niger River to analyze the water in an attempt to find the source behind the red tide explosion." Halla's dark eyes were cool and penetrating.
"Was that your boat that sank the Benin gunboats?" she asked.
"Your intelligence is very good."
"I receive briefings from reports gathered around the world."
"Yes, it was a Numa vessel," Sandecker admitted.
"You know, I assume, the admiral who was chief of staff for the Benin Navy and brother of the nation's president was killed in the battle."
"I heard."
"It was my understanding your boat was flying a French ensign. Doing your devious dirty work under a foreign flag could get your crew shot as enemy agents by the West Africans."
"My men were aware of the danger and volunteered. They knew every hour counts if we are to stop the red tide before it expands beyond our technology to kill it."
"Are they still alive?"
Sandecker nodded. "As of a few hours ago, they had traced the contamination across the Malian border and were approaching the town of Gao unmolested."
"Who else in your government knows about this?"
Sandecker nodded at Chapman and Yeager. "Only the three of us and the men on the boat. No one outside of Numa except you."
General Kazim, the Malian chief of security, is no fool. He'll learn about the battle with Benin's navy, and his intelligence will have warned him of your crew's entry into his country. He'll arrest them the minute they dock.
The very reason I came to you, Madam Secretary.
This was it, Hala thought. What do you want from me, Admiral?
Your help in saving my men.
I thought it would come down to that.
It's vital they be rescued as soon as they discover the origin of the contamination.
We desperately need their analysis data, said Chapman flatly.
Then it's the findings you really want to rescue, she said coldly.
I'm not in the habit of abandoning brave men, Sandecker said, his chin thrust forward.
Hala gave a negative shake of her head. Sorry, gentlemen, I can understand your desperation. But I cannot jeopardize the honor of this office by misusing my power to take part in an illegitimate international operation, regardless of how crucial.
Not even if the men you save are Dirk Pitt and Al Giordino and Rudy Gunn?
Her eyes widened for a brief moment, and then she sagged back in her chair, her thoughts lost in the past for a brief instant.
I begin to see the picture, she said softly. You're using me just as you used them.
I'm not planning a celebrity tennis match, said Sandecker flatly. I'm trying to prevent the loss of uncountable lives.
You really shoot for the heart, don't you?
When it's necessary.
Chapman's eyebrows rose.
I'm afraid I don't understand any of this.
Hala stared off into space as she spoke.
About 5 years ago, the three men you sent up the Niger saved my life from terrorist assassins, not once, but twice. The first time was on a mountain in Breckenridge, Colorado. The other was at an abandoned mine near a glacier on the Straits of Magellan. Admiral Sandecker is playing on my conscience to repay the favor.
I seem to recall, said Jaeger, nodding, it was during the hunt for the Alexandria Library treasure.
Sandecker rose, came over, and sat down beside her.
Will you help us, Madam Secretary?
Hala sat motionless as a statue that slowly began to crack. Her breathing seemed faint and shallow. Finally, she turned slightly and faced Sandecker.
All right, she said softly. I promise to use every source at my fingertips to get our friends out of West Africa. I can only hope we are not too late, and they're still alive.
Sandecker turned away. He didn't want her to see the relief in his eyes. Thank you, Madam Secretary. I owe you. I owe you big.